Any question?
Let's take someone, not me, but someone.
Okay, just a hypothetical.
Completely hypothetical.
Some person of the 6 billion could be any culture, any place, like any time.
So this hypothetical person, somehow he functions well in all his relationships. He knows how to operate relationships, and they are going well. But somehow, just with his wife, the relationship doesn't seem to work, and it's always there are always conflicts.
Not always,
but often.
Occasionally.
Maybe sometimes. Seldom. Sometimes.
Not more than at least 3 times a day. But there's been no definition of what is this problem.
Why does a person deal with his relative in a different way as with everyone else? And until she was not a relative, he could deal with her properly, but as soon as she became a relative, his wife, somehow things went wrong.
Yes. It's called possession. You understand? Because something you possess, you expect is going to go... you expect, how you say? Something that you possess, you identify with it, that it will function the way you think it will. Does that make sense? So therefore, you're not looking at how to deal with it. Others, you're looking, okay, they're there, how are they going to deal? I'll respond to it like that. Because they're not yours. Right? But a husband or wife you think is yours. Therefore, you automatically think that they understand what you want, feel, this, that, blah. But there's still an individual that you still have to apply the same principles that you apply on everybody else. Right? Marriage is to create confidence. Marriage doesn't mean now I don't have to endeavor. Does that make sense? In fact, the endeavor is more. Because now it can go deeper. Only something you possess... are you willing to invest that much energy into? So, does that make some sense? So that's the point, is that the same principles that you apply in relationships with everybody else is going fine. You're not applying in the marriage because of the sense of possession that you don't have to. Right? Let us say you have a friend and they have a car. And at least if you're a little cultured, when you drive their car, you're going to be very careful. But your car, that same carefulness may not be there. You understand? Someone who does drive well with their car is called a good driver. You understand? Automatic is just, oh, whatever I want, the car will do. But in the friend's car, you're being very careful not to do something that's going to disturb the car and therefore disturb your friend.
But also, you know your car better than the friend's car, so you're more careful with the friend's car.
You know your car better than the friend's car, so you're more careful with the friend's car. But let us say it's the same car. So you know how it works, the gears, the clutch, everything. So what we're pointing out is the example is that possession can get in the way because one becomes less aware or less sensitive. So the point is sensitivity is what makes things work. Why is it that you have 6 months, you have 3 year, you have 30 year, you know, how you say, quote unquote, association period. And it goes nicely. But once there's marriage, then it's not the same. What's changed? Possession. It's not yours, so you're being very careful that you can get it. But once it's yours, then you deal with it when you like, how you like, that's what you feel. In other words, let's say you go into a shop. You pick up a very expensive bottle of perfume, and you're looking at it. You'll deal with it very carefully. You'll appreciate it. You don't take it for granted. Even if your friend makes you angry, you'll still put it down carefully because you don't want to have to pay for it if you don't want it. But once you've bought it, who looks at the bottle? You just put it on the shelf, relative. When you want to use it, you use it. When you don't, you don't. And if you get angry, it's yours. You want to throw it on the floor, you do. So the point is that principle of respect, then you still deal as sensitively as before marriage, after marriage. But the difference is the confidence that this is yours now. Does that make sense?
I didn't want to argue the possession part, just saying that sometimes because two people are together, they know each other much more than we know other people, so we know good and bad.
We know good and bad. Oh, we know, okay.
It's easier to look good amongst others than when two people live together and they're
good
together.
Okay.
But still, if you want the relationship to work, the principles of interaction are the same. You know more, you know less, it's no different. The sensitivity that's there on the first day of meeting, you still have to use the same on after 3 months of meeting, or after 3 years, or after 30 years if you want it to work. The more you know, the better it should work. You know what I'm saying? If you look at working, not what is field. In other words, from the field, you know how it works. Okay, let us say that you have someone who were blamed at someone by, yeah, were blamed by somebody that they did something wrong. And this had a great impression upon them. So then, now that person's married to somebody. So then let us say that the other person, let's say they did something wrong. And then the partner then points it out that they just did something wrong. Now, then they'll get upset because they've been told they've done something wrong. Not that they haven't done something wrong. But being blamed for doing something wrong, that's a problem. So you could say, well, what's the trip, you know, just because somebody, you know, 10 years ago said you were wrong, why are you tripping about you were wrong today? It's a different person, different situation, blah. But that's knowing something about them, but that's the wrong application, right? Knowing that that's the problem, now saying that you know better than it should, but now this is how you'd apply it. You know that, therefore, when they do something wrong, instead of pointing out what they did wrong, you could show another way of doing something. And as long as they don't interpret that as you indirectly said they were wrong, then you use it. If they even interpret it that way, you don't say anything. You let it go. You understand? Knowledge does not make a relationship. Knowledge is what you use for a relationship. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. You know? So, in other words, do you want the relationship to work or do you want to be right? If you want to be right, be a lawyer. Go practice. You know, or go work for Amnesty International. But if you want a relationship to work, if you know them so well, you know what makes it work, so you only do those things. And things that don't work, you avoid. Then security is maintained. Is that okay? So that's the meaning of knowing somebody. It means you know them how to make it work, not you know them how to find fault. If you want to know them how to find fault, talk to their mother. You know, she's got the goods. You know, right? And the mother's put all that aside. Right? Here you have a living entity, absolutely self-centered. There's nothing other than them in the world. You know, when they want to eat, they cry. When they want to sleep, they cry. They don't bother, you know, going to the bathroom. They go to the toilet all over everything. They barf all over everything. You know, they don't have any regulation when they sleep, when they eat, nothing. I mean, it can't get worse than that, right? My mother puts all that aside. How do you deal with them that they're like that? They're self-centered. They need something. Then within a split second, you're trying to figure it out. They're hungry, you feed them. They're tired, you put them to sleep. So therefore, the relationship works because you put all the facts that you know, those are used how to relate, not how to find fault. Is that okay?
So just to show better that senior devotees sometimes do the same thing, that they think that their duty is to show the 14 others to.
means if you're going to show the fault, it has to be in a way that the other person appreciates it and is inspired to do something about it, which means you have to tell them how to do something about it and be willing to take them through it. Does that make sense? It's complete. Means the point is, if you find a fault, you have to have the solution how to get through it and be willing to actually take them through it, however long that takes. That's leadership.
Going back to the family situation, women show the faults in their husbands, but they are not willing to take them through the process of correcting it.
Yes, and but I said, who's upset. The leader?
I see.
That's the point. It means the man leads. It means he leads on everything, right? You know, the thing is, though, Shastra says, okay, the husband leads, the woman follows. But generally what happens is the men interpret this to mean whatever I want, just the woman does. Yeah, I say it, they do it. I say jump, they say how high. Great marriage, right? Reality, woman follows means this. Whatever it is that I want the wife to do, I do it first. We've had an argument. I want her to see her fault because she's wrong. I have to see my fault first. I want her to be humble. I have to be humble first. I want her to serve me. I have to serve her first. Slightly different concept of leadership. But that's what leadership is. You lead. You do it first. The king is leading the troops. Where is he standing? In the front. Right? The head cook is doing what? He's the first one in the kitchen. He's the one organized. He made the menu. Therefore, he's leading, right? If the king sits back at the palace and says, hey, you guys go out and, you know, fight with those guys, how will the troops feel, right? You know, they may do it out of some duty, but there's no feeling there. But if they're in the front of the troops, then you don't have to talk about duty. The feeling is so strong, they're willing to be out there and die for you. But that means they're willing to die for them. That's leadership.
What did the husband do wrong? What did that husband do wrong who showed his wife first how to iron, and now he's the one who is ironing all the time, and he showed his wife how to cook, and now he's the cook in the family, and he showed how to listen to the other person, and now he's the one who is listening all the time. Where did he make the mistake?
Well, the last one can't say anything about. That one's standard. Okay. Let us try this. Your skill in ironing and cooking was better than hers, that she feels insecure that if she does it wrong, you'll feel badly. Therefore, she doesn't want to do those two things in case it's not up to the standard you set. That would be one scenario. Other is that you do it very nicely, so it's a standard that she appreciates, and it's a nice medium for a relationship. And she's so satisfied with the way you do it that that becomes a basis. And so many other things she does. You didn't mention cleaning the toilet and cleaning the house and fixing the bed and, you know, cleaning the kitchen and, you know, setting everything nicely in all its places within the house and, you know, arranging all the things to, how you say, that you would cook with, or washing the clothes, or putting the clothes away to be washed, picking up a sock here, another sock over there, you know, a shirt here. You know what I'm saying? Did we... you understand? So that's two things out of another, you know, 5 million, so... And then three, have you ever told her that you kind of thought she would do the cooking? Because if you didn't, how does she know? She may thought you cook, you like to cook, and so therefore then it's a nice way to reciprocate, interact.
Yeah, right?
You cook, she sets up, she cleans up. So unless you've said, how do they even know? You know what I'm saying? So there's different approaches. You have to see, it could be all three of them, or it could be any one of them. There may be something more. Maybe you commented one time that that wasn't cooked so well, right? And if they're very left wing, that was the last day they were ever going to cook for you. You can cook yourself. You can also cook lunch, but I'm just saying. Didn't catch it. Cook yourself, please. You can go jump in the fire.
It doesn't come out in Hungarian.
You know what I'm saying? So what's behind it, you know, unless more detail is known, it could be anything. In other words, left wing will get you now. Right wing will get you later. It'll be gotten. It's just a matter when. Is that okay?
You seem to make the point that sometimes even by setting the example, there's the other side doesn't pick up.
The other side doesn't pick up. There's setting the example in an activity, and there's setting example in the relationship. So I was specifically talking about relationship. You want the other person to drop the argument, you have to drop it first. Skills is another thing. But the point is that a woman doesn't adjust very well in being told she's wrong. So you might risk that you end up doing it. Right? At least for some time until they've, how you say, you've been disciplined appropriately. Did that answer the half of the question that you asked before I started blabbering?
Yeah, I just don't know what can be done, like in a situation, like in his situation, when he was asking about what is a way to get across when it's activity. Okay, the mood, we understand that you have
okay,
to
Okay, so it's
it,
activity.
When it's activity neglected, let's say, by the wife, then...
Activity neglected by the wife. So, but the point is generally food and clothes won't be neglected by women. We'd like to eat nice, dress nice. So there must be something else behind. Because when we brought up the point of, was a fault pointed out, or was it ever discussed, then there was silence. You know, in other words, what are duties within the house should be obvious. You know what I'm saying? Then it makes it clear. Because that's the thing. Yeah. You're living with somebody, so you should be able to talk about anything. That communication, that camaraderie, that's the real basis of the relationship. If you can't communicate, then how it's going to work? At the end of the day, what you're left with is companionship. Right? You know what I'm saying? Met a couple, they were about 80 years old. And so I asked, what keeps the relationship together? And they said, companionship. And I said, romance, you know, that was gone, you know, like 50 years ago. Right? So point is it's companionship. In other words, a couple has to be best friends. Right? That's the thing. All the rasas are there. So those that has to be there also. Is that okay?
Somehow the whole thing gets stuck at the level of communication because the woman does something, the man raises his voice, then the woman starts crying, and then the man raises his voice even more. So the whole thing gets stuck at the and that's it. It's finished at that point.
Because the technique is wrong. Shakuntala points out in the Mahabharata, which he's talking to Maharaj Dushyanta, who's her husband. And one of the points she makes is, even in anger, a man never does anything to displease his women. That's why if a grihastha is not sense-controlled, he'll never be successful. Upadeshamrita starts with, you know, anger. One of the things that has to be controlled, right? And that comes from words. If you don't control what you speak, then you don't control the mind, then you don't control anger, right? Because they did something wrong in mechanical skill, either some physical activity or some social interaction. But it's an activity that gets an observable result, which is important for the man. You know, we mentioned that it's the experience gained from the interaction or the result that's important to the woman. So even if they're wrong, it should be said in a pleasant way that the experience is nice. Nice doesn't mean it has to be chirpy. Nice means that it has to be able to be appreciated. So they were wrong in the activity. But the man was wrong in the exchange. Mm-hmm. In his anger, he dealt improperly. Maybe he's judicially correct, but emotionally he was wrong. Therefore, the woman gets angry because the man's wrong. So now if you want her to understand her wrong, the man has to first understand his wrong. And there's only one way, humility. No ifs, no ands, no buts. The man is humble and proves his sincerity that he was wrong, then the mood will change. So as soon as they do something wrong, by habit you say something and it's rougher than what they expected and they start to cry, then you don't say anything more. Then you start saying, oh, you're sorry, this, that, and prove your, how you say, you know, repentance. You catching all this? Notice this. The brahmacharya is hearing all this and smiling. I'm missing out on all this. And the grihastha men are all sitting there going, whoa, that's what's wrong. You know what I'm saying? That's why it doesn't matter. We discuss brahmacharya, you know how to be a good grihastha. We discuss actual detail of grihastha, it makes great brahmacharis.
You cannot be completely left out, because if a lady devotee crashes the sankirtan vehicle, then he has to react in a nice and polite way, so he cannot be left out completely. He being a leader and a senior devotee.
Of course. Or you can get another brahmachari to drive the bus and park down the street. Sicken. Yeah.
You already suggested that brahmachari should be the driver.
See, the point is, don't expect them to do something that you're not doing. Because unless you can tell them that's how they have to deal and protect them when they do that. So in other words, if the lady crashes the sankirtan van, you should deal with it, not him. Because if he tells her, no, don't worry, these things happen, things like that, then she'll say, oh, he's so, you know, considerate, so kind, so this and that, the perfect husband, like that.
Oh, yes, I see.
You understand? Because you're supposed to protect the brahmacharis. Brahmacharis are junior, therefore they have to be protected, right? Human society means brahmacharis, women, cows, brahmins, and the old are protected. So even though he's, not a punk kid, still, he's a brahmachari, he has to be protected by the grihasthas.
So all these kinds of proper reciprocations, can they be learned from the relationship between Radha and Krishna? Because they are the perfect examples of perfect reciprocation.
Yes, as long as you don't, that's where it comes from. Have you ever heard in any pastime Krishna yell at Radharani? But how many pastimes do you hear of Radharani is mad with Krishna? He tells him to get at it. And how does Krishna respond when Radharani is angry? Does he say, hey, make a bridge, get over it? Well, he's down there on his knees. That's God. Why do you think he's got 6,108 wives? He knows what he's doing. You understand? That's where it comes from.
He doesn't want to get married. He just theoretically wanted to know whether we should learn these things from those pastimes.
Somebody was in the deity room and they were offering a bunch of bananas and they were eating the bananas in the deity room. And then somebody came by outside the deity room, and from in the deity room they heard a voice say, I'm not eating any bananas. Next question.
Basically we're talking about if the lady, the Mataji, the woman, is frustrated, unhappy, dissatisfied, that's basically the lack of leadership in men.
Yes. Means if a woman is protected, she will always be happy. But one has to know what protection means. Right? Protection means knowing what their character is, knowing what the needs are, you provide that. What that means for their emotions, their intellect, you know, how you say, the senses, whatever it is. The principle is the same, just sophistication, it will be different. Like you see in the north, the ladies wear very bright colors and everything, while in south they wear more subdued, astringent colors. East is kind of a mix of the two. But the principle is they like colors, they like aesthetics. So every woman's like that. So then the husband has to figure out what does that mean? What colors, what smells, what tastes, what situations, what words, what tones of voice? Otherwise, why be more intelligent if you don't use it? And if one's not clever, women don't appreciate that, right? Women eat twice as much. They're four times as cunning. Six times as envious, nine times as lusty, okay? So you've heard that, bad news. Put in the box, stick somewhere over in the corner. But now let's apply this point. Eat twice as much means they appreciate food twice as much as men do. Yeah. Man sits down to good food, goes, Woman sits down to good food. Oh, wow, so good. Right? So that's... Wait, so if they're not doing that, it's not good. Four times as clever. That means they appreciate cleverness four times more than men will. Why do you think girls like Krishna? So clever. So dullness is never appreciated by women. That's why couch potatoes are like, you know, bottom of the line. You understand? You have a local saying for a couch potato?
It's not really good. But we know what you're talking about. You know, yes, he suggested an expression.
Like a beetroot or something that just sits there. Okay. Does that make sense? Okay. So that means they're four times more clever, but clever means practical intelligence. It doesn't necessarily mean academic. An individual woman may or may not have academic intelligence, but they're all clever. In their own, whatever is important to them, they get it done. So that six times as envious. So that means they're six times more affected by it than men. So then that means when some other lady has been jealous of them or something and makes a comment, then the man is thinking, oh, it's not such a big deal, because it's not to a man. But multiply whatever is the deal to the man times six, that's the experience of the woman. So that means that when you find out what's the problem and they go on blabbering and crying and this and that for half an hour, you don't tell them the whole time, well, what's the trip? You go with that, support them and everything, because that's how much effect it has on them. Yeah. Nine times as lusty. Lust means desire. So there's nine times more desire to see, touch, taste, everything than there is for them. That's why they have more things. They have, you know, that's generally the mistaken formula of the brahmachari. Or the brat bachelor. I have this much stuff, I need this much money, so therefore if I get married, I multiply that number by two. Right? The formula is nine. So whatever you have, whatever it requires to maintain you, multiply by 10, and that'll maintain you and your wife.
Do you have a daughter?
Huh?
Do you have a daughter?
Add another nine. So 19. When they're small, then it's the mother's choice, and when they're bigger, then it's their choice. Fortunately, there's no designer wear diapers and, you know what do you call it, those little things they suck on and stuff. Yeah, but if Pierre Cardin was making them,
szerencsére a pelenkából fogsz
mert. Don't tell your wife about it. You know what I'm saying? So that means, so this brings up another point where it'll come in. This is one of the other questions. Is the man feels, I'm putting in so much, seemingly getting so much less back. I'm putting in so much service, and they're only a little service coming back. So then, that will get to me. Is, we have to understand is that one to the man is his unit of perception. the unit of saying nine, that's compared to the man's unit. But that nine is the woman's one unit. So when that nine is fulfilled, that's one for the woman. And then you get back your one, which is one for the man. You can't compare them. You know, it's like, I eat five chapatis. The elephant eats 100 chapatis. That's just for him a normal meal. Does that make sense? How you doing?
The question is that, can we somehow reduce these multiplying figures somehow in practice?
Do elephants eat less? Why would you want to? Don't you want to? What is your medium for service? You know what I'm saying? What's the medium for the relationship unless you're creating the environment in which they can be happy? If you reduce it, then what are you doing? If you want to reduce it, spend a night with the boys. Then it's one-on-one. But if you go home, it's nine-on-one. That's why conjugal rasa is so much more deep and intense than friendship.
Sure.
Right? Like parental rasa. Everyone figures that's pretty good. How much service does the kid render back to the parent compared to what the parent does for the kid? You know what I'm saying? I think they did a calculation in America. From the time the kids conceive to the time they finish university, the parent will have spent something like $1.2 or $3 million. That's a common family. That's just, you know, that's the average of what will be spent. Any kids ever given their parent back that much money? Or didn't sleep for 2 years when they were born? You know, or were total anxiety any time they did anything and moved that they could kill themselves falling down the stairs, get run over by a truck, be eaten by the neighbor dog. Right? So it's so much more intense. Yes. So you've just been through that, that you've dealt with somebody who only gives and hardly gets anything back. Now it's your turn.
So does that mean, just going back to the women, does it mean that their service is nine times more intense towards Krishna than men's service?
No. Not that. It means that's equal. Yeah. Emotionally it's equal. You're just talking about, you know, the social interaction. You know what I'm saying?
Why less intelligent?
Why less intelligent? First class intelligence means to learn by hearing. Second class by seeing. Third class by actually doing and having to experience it. A man can learn by hearing or seeing. Women only learn by doing. That's why when you tell them, if you do this, this will happen or that will happen, then maybe by relationship they won't do, but they haven't necessarily learned. Therefore, that's why when they try it, then it goes wrong, then they understand. Does that make sense? So that makes a difference. Is that understood? Therefore, in application, then, if they see we should do this or that, you know it'll be wrong, they're not convinced, then you let it run, unless it's going to be something very detrimental. So unless you can explain it in such a way to get through, then you have to, what do you say? You have to let it write its course.
Then why is it that there are so much more criminals among men than among women, and so much more criminals who commit the same crime again and again?
Because they have women that they got to get money together for. Does that make sense? Generally, the women are in jail for shooting their husband that didn't take care. Is that okay?
So it often happens that if a man preaches nicely to a woman, to a Mataji, then the Mataji will think that this man would make a nice husband for me. So how can we avoid this? Not to preach by not preaching to women, or by preaching in a not so nice way to women?
Either not preaching or keep it to the intellectual platform. Because intellectuals appreciate it, but just don't touch as much on the... Means intellectual means it's emotionally compatible, but it isn't emotional. Does that make sense? Means present everything logically, and just stick to logic. Does that make any more sense?
Yeah.
Also, it's the mood. You just keep the mood formal. They catch moods like anything. Because they'll generally only respond to something that's available.
So probably my fault was that I considered the lady to whom I preached due to my age as my daughter, and maybe it didn't work.
If she became your wife, yes, it didn't work. If she latched on as a daughter, then it did work. But you also, besides preaching, also added a new relation.
So his problem, theoretically or hypothetically, is that it may occur that the man thinks that this girl would make a nice wife to me, and that's why the girl reacts in a way. So it's the man who first thinks that this girl would make a nice wife to me, and that's why the woman reacts in such a way.
Not necessarily that he thinks, but just he leaves himself open. You know, in other words, it's a specific kind of energy, because women can pick up what is the energy. First canto mentions they have a sixth sense for mood.
Okay.
Like if you want to know who on your list of brahmacharis are real brahmacharis and could be good brahmacharis, write all the names down, hand it to the ladies and tell them to tick off which ones are going to be the nice tikka brahmacharis.
Okay.
And that list that you get back, that's the real list. Yes? They know. They know who are the brahmacharis and who are the bachelors. Just they keep their mouth shut. Unless, of course, they want that bachelor.
So, it was mentioned that maybe we should reduce the multiplying figures, and his suggestion is that maybe the problem is that men are trying to repair women or correct women or mend women.
Yeah.
So that they become like the man.
Then why not marry a man? You know, I mean, just have to nip over to Denmark and Hari Bal. You know what I'm saying? The point is someone marries a woman because of the feminine nature and interaction. You know what I'm saying? You get a horse because it behaves like a horse. You don't take a horse and then you're going to turn it into a cat. You know what I'm saying? The problem is the more you put it together, because the point is you can get them to be like a man. Because the living entities in the material world, because they think they're masculine, they're God. But the point is do you want to live with a woman who behaves like a man? You want them to be totally feminine but have all the masculine requirements. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the point, is that then the closer it comes together, then the more you're going to be dissatisfied. Right? Why does it work? Krishna is 100% male, Radharani is 100% female. Any problems that come up in the material relationship is because the man, due to lack of training, acts like female, and the female, due to their lack of training, is trying to act also like male, like Krishna. A horse does whatever it does with an expert trainer. How did they do it? Is it you walked out into the corral? You know, corral? Where they keep the horses. Right? And then you stood there at attention and says, "All right, ladies, I want 100 push-ups right now." And that's what broke the horse, yeah? It works on boys in the army, but it won't work on horses. There's a way of dealing with a horse that you train the horse. So if the woman isn't dealt with as a woman, then she won't manifest the qualities of one. Men make women. Man behaves properly, a woman can be a woman. Does that make sense? So if the men don't act like men, the women can't act like women. And profit is in the difference. I buy a product for 1 florin. I sell it for 1 florin. What's my profit? Not so much. Okay, I'm a man, I make my woman wife into a man. What's the profit? 0. I buy the stock for one florin, I sell it for 10. More profit. I sell it for 100 florin, or 1,000, or 1,000,000. The more the difference, the greater the profit. The more the man is a man, a woman is a woman, the more that exchange then satisfies that particular need. In the Vedic concept, masculinity is an attitude. Femininity is an attitude. Therefore, that's the basis of the relationship, is the attitude. The modern, the only way you can tell the difference between a man and a woman is, you know, is based on particular anatomical appendages. Therefore, the relationship where they can get profit in the difference is only physical. Right? Because mentality, there's no difference. But in the Vedic, then, because of how the dealing is, therefore, that male-female exchange basically is happening on the emotional platform. So it's the center. From that, then the intellectual expands, the sensual expands. But the emotional is the basis. Modern, it's sexuality is the basis. Not even sensuality. Modern man should in no way fool himself that he has ever physically satisfied a woman. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, even though it's said that this is their main thrust of everything, then they're not actually getting what they're looking for. So unless a man behaves like a man, the woman can't behave like a woman. Conjugal rasa is not tasted. Therefore, four marriages. Popular around this place. Right? And then the only reason you don't go beyond that, you're too old and tired to start again, so you just put up with it. So you become humble and this and that because you have to live with it, so therefore it works. But if they'd done that on the first marriage, then it would have worked and they wouldn't have had to bother with the other two, three marriages.
If a man is a man, is it possible for him to marry any woman who is also a woman because he's able to lead her, or there is still the compatibility is still important to... So can it happen that a man is a man and a woman is a woman and still they can't work together because they are not compatible?
Can, it just takes much more work. You know what I'm saying? But man is a principle, woman's a principle, it can work. But the closer the natures are together, the more compatible, the more easy it is to, you know, natural it is to make it work. That's why you get somebody with high compatibility, but the marriage didn't work. Or those with lower compatibility and it's working. It's the amount of endeavor put into it. So if you had high compatibility and high endeavor, you'd have a very nice marriage. The chart only shows compatibility. It does. It's nothing to do what you do with it. I go to the market. I buy all the best vegetables and grains and spices imported from here and there and most expensive, best quality. I put it all in the kitchen. So the potential is something fabulous could be cooked. But it's still up to the individual to do it, right? Just because you have it doesn't mean it's done. That's the mistake. Oh, we have great compatibility, so I don't have to endeavor. No, you have to endeavor just as much as anyone else. That's the point. So if you endeavor, then you get better results. But it's suggested you don't go below 50% compatibility. Nobody should say, oh, if you just work a little harder. Someone who has a perfect marriage, they can say that. Anybody else shouldn't sanction anything below 50%. And if the marriage falls apart, it should be that leader's fault.
Yeah. But.
But.
But what should be done when there is a lady who hasn't found a suitable husband for or fiancé for years, and there is a nice boy who is with 20% compatibility and there is no chance that the girl would find another one, then what should be done in that case?
Check in another temple. Check another yatra.
Check another astrologer.
Yes, maybe.
Yeah, I could.
Bribe the astrology.
Huh?
Bribe the astrology.
Can, but still.
He doesn't have this attachment, that attachment, that all Eger ladies should get married to Eger boys and
things nice.
Like that. In his practice of leadership, he's met many cases when the compatibility was just 20% or around that number. He can promise only one thing, he will not curse them if they get divorced. They will remain his friends.
But they can't hold any position in society, can't do any service, can't do any deity worship, can't be Brahman, can't be nothing because you screwed up.
Yes.
And if he doesn't sanction the marriage, doesn't allow the marriage?
That's the thing, if they do it on their own, then it's their problem. You know what I'm saying? What people do on their own, it's out of your hands. My point is, you sanction it, you're responsible. You don't sanction it, they do it anyway, that's their problem. The consequences go to them. You sanction it, it goes to you. If everything was good and everything like that and they've been trained nicely, then you're free basically because you've done your best, you've set them up, you've trained them, you've done everything you could. Now it's their business to make it run. You know, you have a proper plane, you have a proper pilot, you've taught them how to fly. Now they fly nicely or not, that's their problem. Mm-hmm. But you don't train them and then you let them fly and there's a problem, then it's your responsibility. In other words, if it's a bad match, you say no, then you have no responsibility. If it's a good match, everything's lined up, everyone's trained properly, and it doesn't work, you also don't have any responsibility. But if it's a bad match and you say it's okay, then you have responsibility. Does that make sense?
He has to begin a new life. Yeah. He has to start a new.
The phoenix, right? The point is the social structure is a big responsibility, and every individual has to take it seriously. So those who take it seriously, that's your community, and then those who take it less seriously, then they're, you know, how you say, take part in the community as to whatever degree they can. Because at any time, someone could become serious. But it's not up to one person to do it, it's up to everybody has the responsibility to take seriously the culture and practice it. So, individual has their responsibility, the leaders have their responsibility. Very hard to be a leader if no one will follow. And you have so many followers, very hard to get anywhere without a leader. So then they work together. That's what makes it dynamic. So those who are willing to work, that's where you start. Then you build from there. Because just because someone has political or economic interests, that's not enough to be socially involved. They actually have to fit the proper move. Just because someone wants to be in charge or someone has money, that doesn't make them qualified to run the community. They should know how and make that endeavor to run the community. Does that make sense? Leadership is automatically seen and appreciated, at least by other leaders or those who want to follow. So-called leaders, so-called followers, very hard to understand what leadership is. Is that okay?
Nice. Hypothetically, theoretically, in some sense. So the point is that why follow the
The wife follows the husband.
Yeah, and if the husband is a good leader, the wife will be okay and happy.
Yes.
But if I apply the same logic to leadership, those who are followers are not satisfied, they're upset and angry with problems, is this a fault of leadership as well?
In theory, you could say yes. That's as long as they're a leader and they're followers. Then you could say that something's wrong. Or you could say is they're good followers, they're good leaders, but they're not well matched. You know, just like husband and wife are matched. He may be a good husband, she may be a good wife. You have to make sure you get it's close enough together that the gap is easily bridged. Right? So you have to look. But if they're not followers, they're not a leader, then that's another thing. Right? If everybody's sincere, even if they're not, it'll work. It may not be as dynamic, but it'll function, right? You know, means pleasantly. No ecstasy, just pleasant. Okay.
So, we've been talking about relationships, and we see that in relationships between husband and wife, or leaders and followers, or senior devotees and junior devotees, the relationships are sometimes based on diplomacy and not on sincerity and How should we relate to that? And in these cases, our sense of security is damaged, and how can we put up with it?
But what's been left out of here, it's like there's sincerity, there's diplomacy. What about sincere diplomacy? Lack of diplomacy can create insecurity. Diplomacy without sincerity will create insecurity. So the real point of security is sincerity, not diplomacy. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is diplomacy is a normal part of life. You use it basically at every moment of your life. You know what I'm saying? You see something that's nice, you appreciate what's nice about it. You wouldn't do it, but you appreciate what's nice. So diplomacy simply means that you say something that the other person, or you say your point in such a way that the other person will appreciate what you are saying. Because relationship, that's truth. Saying whatever comes up in my mind and falls out of my mouth, that's not truth. That's called uncultured. Nowadays, modern man has come up with this weird concept of truth. And the more this truth is used, the more this society is destroyed. So if it breaks relationships, it's false. In fact, it's demoniac. It may be fact, but it's factual demoniacness. Truth is defined by God. Mm-hmm. What is in relationship to God, that's truth. Anything else is false. The pious, most nice, most considerate, kind, affectionate approach, if it's not in connection to Krishna, is a lie. And anything in connection to Krishna is truth. Now you try to package that truth as nicely as possible. That's culture. That's sophisticated. That's refined. Just being able to say whatever you want, that's aboriginal. You know what I'm saying? Unsophisticated means you don't know how to say it in a pleasant way. No one ever said the wild Germanic tribes from the, how you say, that invaded Europe from Central Asia were ever civilized. No one's ever blamed them of that fault. Right? So what a bunch of uncivilized tribals say is truth cannot be taken seriously by any practitioner of Krishna consciousness. Truth is established by God, not by political correctness. But political correctness used in the service of God, that's culture. And not using it is uncultured. Maybe Krishna conscious, but a little rough. In Vrindavan, they do have aboriginals. They do live on the other side of Govardhan. And they do walk around with their chest exposed. Aboriginals. On this side of Govardhan live the gopis, who are dressed nicely, talk nicely, behave nicely. Like that. So they are Krishna conscious, they are there, but they are aboriginals. Right? They live in the forest. Is that okay? So the point is that every word you say is diplomatic. Even if you're yelling and screaming, you have a particular effect you're trying to get from that yelling and screaming. But if you don't know the science of diplomacy, it might not work. You get angry with the husband and you say, I don't want to see you, get out of here. And then he walks out of the room, walks out of the house. That wasn't exactly what you meant. What you meant was the attitude that you're having now and the behavior they're having now, I don't want to have anything to do with. So that means one's being diplomatic by saying, get out of here, I hate you, I don't want to see you. But unless the man knows the translation of your diplomacy, then your diplomacy will fail. That's the whole point. Diplomats know what the language is, you know. Yes, we're not exactly satisfied with the terms of the condition means, I think it sucks. Right? So like that. So diplomacy is always used. It's sincerity that is the point. The kid just, you know, has made a picture, right?
Yeah,
in the first grade. And the mother's telling how fabulous it is. The enthusiasm the kid put into it, the endeavor they put, that was first class. But the result is still first grade art. You won't find it on the Sistine Chapel. You know what I'm saying? You know, Michelangelo was not up there with crayons. So that's the point. If the mother just said, "Ah, this is a piece of junk," you'd say she's a good mother. And that's truth, you know. Just speaking the truth. I had to say what was in my heart. So if your heart is a black hole of despicable bad qualities, who wants to see it? What is your right that others have to see your heart? Who said? I mean, everyone's got to come over and look at my garbage can, you know. I mean, it's just the most filthiest, stinkiest. Everyone's got to come and see it. Who said speaking truth is your right? Sure. You want to speak it, hey, go out in the forest, yell and scream all you want. But where is it written that you have the right that others have to listen to whatever falls out of your mouth? That's why truth rattles around in your head. And diplomacy comes out your mouth. Is that okay? So what you're looking for is sincerity, you know? Or, so truth without sincerity. Oh, how do you like my sari? Yeah, yeah, great. Okay, let's go. Satisfied? No. It was the right words. What you want to hear is, oh, how's the sari? Oh, yeah, that's great. Right? And then the wife will say, okay, let's go. You know what I'm saying?
So, if there is a certain context, we know what the truth is, but what we are looking for is sincerity, no matter how it's wrapped up. So it's even if you know what the truth is, if something is said sincerely with a sincere mood, we accept it because we are looking for sincerity.
Yeah, because we're looking for a relationship.
But then the question comes up, but can I be more sincere than I am in reality?
No. To men, yes. To women, no. Because men don't question, women do. Right? That's why, that brings up why women will re-question. You know what I'm saying? Because sincerity establishes confidence. Therefore, one, there is particular words of sincerity, particular tone of voice of sincerity, right? But that can be learned. Therefore, you have these suave, smooth-talking guys that can always catch girls, but they don't keep them, right? Because they're not actually sincere. They've learned the art of sincerity, but they're not actually sincere. So applying that, therefore, you see, is that the wife's expecting that the husband will say, oh, that's a nice sari, right? But if she doesn't, then if the mood is good, then she'll say, oh, how do you like my sari? As long as he gives a good answer, then she's satisfied. So that's brought us up to the point now. But if always the same thing is said, which is appreciated, but they want to check it. You know, so, oh, how do you like the sari? Oh, it's great. And what the guy thinks, okay, job done. And then she says, what do you like about it? And then he's going, oh my God. yeah, I like the color, or, you know, I like the pattern, or, you know, something, you know. He has to prove that he likes. Oh, well, what do you like about the pattern? If there's a detected any, you know, how you say, he just said that. So. Oh, I like the little paisley. Those represent mangoes, just for anybody. Oh, so you don't like the little flowers? No, I like the flowers also. No, you don't like the flowers. You only like the paisleys. No, I like the flowers and the paisleys. So basically you got it where he's groveling completely on the ground, and she goes, oh, okay, yeah. And then goes, and the guy went, what was that? So that's to check sincerity. Right? So sincerity is what's looked for. Does that make sense? That goes into it. Oh, you want to say something?
Just when the man sincerely don't care about the sari.
What if they sincerely don't care about the sari? Then he's sincerely going to be in some serious trouble. And she's sincerely not going to talk to him until he does. Right? Or she's going to rip off the sari and go put something else on and never touch that again. It can turn to compost on the floor where she dropped it. Because she's not going to pick it up. You don't like it, you pick it up. You throw it out. Point is, why does she have a sari that he doesn't like?
I didn't say he doesn't like, but doesn't care so much.
He doesn't care. Well, then he better start caring. Right? What's good for the goose is good for the gander. Does that make sense? Just like he's gonna like her food, he's gonna like her dress, he's gonna like everything. He's gonna like her hair, he's gonna like her makeup, he's gonna like.
So what did Srila Prabhupada live his married life in the same way? Did he lead his family in the same way? Because we get the picture that he was sitting in the upper floor reading Bhagavatam, and he was going straight with his spiritual life and preaching while his wife was having tea in the on the first floor and didn't care.
They heard that in the Brahmachari class.
The picture that they got was that the husband is very Krishna conscious, practicing Krishna consciousness in a very determined way, listening to Bhagavatam, and he has to make his wife Krishna conscious too. And so, starting from that, he knew some couples who did their association period in that way, that they while associating, they were listening to Srimad Bhagavatam, they were reading Srimad Bhagavatam to one another. And
yeah, but once they get married. Point is if you just want to read Bhagavatam and preach to somebody about Bhagavatam, why would you get married? Yes. And if a woman just wanted to hear Bhagavatam, why would she get married? You know what I'm saying? She doesn't have to pick up any dirty socks. She doesn't have to wipe off the toilet seat every time she wants to use it. I mean, life is a lot easier without marriage. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Right. One gets married because of that need of male-female support. Is that what I'm saying? The point is you're dealing, therefore you deal nicely. Kardama Muni, Pakka Brahmachari. You can't find any fault in his, practice of Brahmacharya, his austerities. But he found that still within his heart was that desire for feminine association. He approached the Lord, and then arrangement was made, he'd get married. But his point was to finish up this desire by connecting it to Krishna so it dissolves, so then he can leave and go back to Godhead. He got married, right? Now, Swayambhuva Manu, it's a side point, but how did he arrange the marriage? He picked the boy and that's it, bus finished, I'm the head of the house, it goes my way, the highway. Or he took his wife and his daughter to make sure that they were also satisfied with what he thought was a good arrangement. Yeah. Then they're married. She's a princess. She's the granddaughter of Lord Brahma. Right? Of course, he's the son of Brahma, but she's a princess, right? You can imagine a Kshatriya who is the granddaughter of Lord Brahma, what facility you'd have. Because you see, later when they arranged for her 2,000 bridesmaids to, decorate her, she wasn't going, oh, too many people. She was perfectly fine with 2,000 girls dressing her, bathing her, putting on her makeup. 2,000. Okay, so this girl then goes, and he's a hermit. He lives in an ashram, a little grass hut, and that's it. And he does yajnas. So his wife then just assisted in all that. her fancy fine hair, the fineness of her skin, all these different things she just let go. Her hair became matted, you know, her skin became dirty. So she's done that for some time, and Kardama Muni is satisfied that this is a really good girl. A good mother produces a good son, right? She produced Kapila Muni, God. Can't get better than that. And so in that, then, seeing that, then he arranged all these maid servants and everything. He's a yogi. Right, so according to his ability, if he had just been, you know, a regular human being in a little grass hut, that's as good as it gets. But he's agnistic, right? So then he, according to his ability, then arranges a flying palace that can move anywhere in the universe and has all amenities that there are in the universe inside. And he arranges for 2,000 maidservants to decorate her and take care of her. And he's only interested to go back to Godhead. You understand? She's a woman. If he needs her, then he has to take care of her needs. That's why a girl is always trying to find out if you need her. Because if you need her, you'll take care of her needs. So even though if Prabhupada's wife is sitting downstairs drinking tea and eating biscuits, who provided the tea and biscuits? Where did the cup come from? Where did the platter come from? Where did the table come from? Understand? I'm sure it was even decent tea. And how could she be so confident that when he says tea or me, she's so confident in the relationship that he'll pick her, that when she jokingly says tea, he takes it literally and walks out. You understand? That means you had one seriously confident woman. That means seriously protected. So all that was going on while he was sitting upstairs studying the Bhagavatam. You know what I'm saying? Yes. It's just like this. Let us say we have a good meal. Nice preparations, well served, nice atmosphere. That's what you see. But for that to be there, what was behind that? How much planning, shopping, preparation, cleaning was there to get those 10 preparations on the table? So those who don't know cooking, note that point, they think the food comes on the table by magic. So they appreciate what's on the table. But those who are expert at cooking know what went into all that and appreciate even more what's on the table. In other words, you were told the story in that way by someone who didn't know what grihastha life was. Because otherwise, how was it holding together? Why, how did he have, what, 5 kids? You don't have kids if the wife doesn't like you. Wives don't like you if you don't take care of them. But the point is it's secondary. You know what I'm saying? So the primary is what is focused on. Does that make sense? Discussion is always on the primary. Unless it goes into a secondary discussion. So therefore, this is the point. Let us readjust, because in here, then we look at, well, Prabhupada just sits there, studies his Bhagavatam all day, teaches his wife and kids Bhagavatam, and everything's perfect. Do you actually appreciate the greatness? Or is it just an excuse for not making any endeavor, underlying the feeling that it generates? Okay. Getting tired. Okay, so let her do it for a while. And then, where we wear her out, then. Thank you. Okay, then, we're still on the air, or? How many hours do these things go for? 24. Okay. Only 24. Now, let us try presenting. So, therefore, it's kind of like, yeah, you know, Prabhupada, you know, he didn't care for these ladies. He was, you know, just got in there. You know, he was, you know, not one of these, you know, popped out grihasthas, you know, like that kind of. But it's kind of like it makes, okay, fired up, brahmachari. But did it inspire one to study Bhagavatam or do service or be responsible or anything? Mm-hmm. All it generates is, the women, just a distraction. And what service was established? What service mood was established? Yeah. What relationship was established? All one did was establish Sankarshan masculinity. But in Sankarshan, there's no relationship, no active relationship. Let's look at it the other way. Here you have a man who is running his house perfectly. His wife is satisfied. She has all facility. He's running his business. He's making money. He has 5 children. You don't hear of any problems in his household life. On top of that, he's publishing and writing books, preaching, inviting over, senior Vaishnavas from the Gaudiya community, discussing philosophy with them. Name me the grihastha doing that. That's how you take that example. This is not example how to be a tough, popped-out brahmachari. This is how to be a first-class grihastha. It was just him and his wife, no kids, and okay, you could say 5 kids. And writing magazines, writing books, giving lectures, taking association, supporting the temple, running his business. That's a grihastha. Now, does that inspire service attitude? What is a proper perspective? In other words, does the first example put householder life in perspective, or does the second one?
Second.
Yeah. That's how it's supposed to be used. That's the point. Right? The point that they want to establish, you would use someone else. You'd use Vishwanath or Raghunath. Because that was how you have everything and you walk out. Raghunath Das, 2 uncles with no heir. 2 men. They're just there. Okay. They get 20 million gold coins per year in their pocket. Gold coins about this big. How much is that worth? Not bad, Gold coin like that, probably what? 12 grams? Like that? Yeah. A lot of money. Yeah, like $1,000. They get 2 million $1,000 coins every year. That would definitely put them in Forbes magazine. They got it in gold. Everybody else has it on paper. Stocks, right? Somebody sneezes, your stocks evaporate. This is gold coins. It's real. It's there. Okay? His wife is as beautiful as Indra's wife. And they're not just saying this. They're meaning it. He left that. That's where you take your example. Or Vishwanath. They married him young. He's ignoring his wife because he's just chanting Hare Krishna. Senior relatives come and say you should, fulfill the duty of, her womanhood. Right? So he agrees. So she dresses up, comes to bed with him. And then he starts talking about Bhagavatam, because the perfection is to become God conscious. And he talks the whole night about Bhagavatam. So he's in bed with a girl as beautiful also as Indra's wife, who is ready for a conjugal relationship and is dressed for it, and he's talking Bhagavatam. Right? How many grihasthas here? The wife takes off the clothes, says, I want to do it, and you could sit there and talk Bhagavatam all night. Raise your hands. Go for it. No hand? That's how these are used. They left the grihastha ashram. They had no kids like that. It's a different thing. They didn't want to get married in the first place. It was just the tradition of the family. They were married. You don't use that example for someone who's a brahmachari, wanted to get married, and then wants to still look tough and cool to his so-called popped-out brahmachari friends. It just struck me. Do you know the translation of popped out? No, okay. It's something from the 70s and 80s. Popped out means a brahmachari who's completely lusty and just, can't hold himself together. It's like you got something inside that's coming out. Yeah, so when you say popped out, brahmachari, he's completely, lost it. So that's how you use these examples from Shastra. Because you see, in those 3 renditions, there's an inspiration that no matter how beautiful the wife is, or how much wealth and all that, And if it's unfavorable for Krishna consciousness, it can be left, and they never turn back. That's what that example is. And the other example of Prabhupada is how, being a perfect grihastha, doing all his duties like that, still he found time for studying Bhagavatam, writing articles, making his magazine, preaching, associating with the Vaishnava. Okay? Good?
So I've received different advice from different grihasthas to the grihastha ashram. And some devotees said that actually it's the duty of the husband to take care of the wife's emotional needs. It doesn't need to be constantly in maya on the emotional platform, but to address the needs of the wife. But then other devotees, also grihasthas, senior devotees, even leaders have told him that actually grihastha ashram is maya. And whenever the wife is on the mental platform, they should just be shot. And it's like a battlefield. And the whole thing is just mine. So how should we...
Point is you're going to take care of... You married a woman. So, of course, the soul comes along with it, you know, as, you know, how you say, as part of the package deal. But... You didn't marry the soul, right? You married a gross and subtle body. So as a husband, your duty is to take care of that gross and subtle body so that it becomes God conscious. Women have emotions. It's part of their needs. So that means their sensual, emotional, and intellectual needs have to be taken care of. Otherwise, why would you get married? Do you know that sannyas is also illusory? Sannyas means a person who's attached to detachment. Detachment still is not Krishna. You have to be attached to Krishna. But in other words, you're engaging your attachments in the Lord's service. Therefore, sannyas is also maya. So is brahmacharya. Since when is the soul a sannyasi or a brahmachari or a vanaprastha? Right? What is the material body made out of? Spiritual energy? It's maya. So anything you see, touch, smell, and can understand is all maya. That building is made out of maya. But what makes that building that we don't call it maya, even though it's made out of material energy? Because it's connected to Krishna. So the difference between maya and Krishna consciousness, is it connected to Krishna or not? So therefore we go to the market. And we go, all these potatoes, all maya. All these cabbages, maya. Everyone's selling them, maya. The whole market's maya. The city's maya. It's all maya. Right? And then you'll say, ooh, staunch. Or you'd say, crazy. So now, what does the Krishna conscious marketer do when they go to the market? Here's a nice potato that I can gauge in Krishna's service. Here's a nice cabbage. And of course, the top of the line, the red peppers. Like that. Isn't it? So, therefore, something only becomes not maya if it's connected to Krishna. So if one ignores the emotional needs of the wife, what Krishna consciousness has been performed? What? Nothing. So unless you can connect those emotions to Krishna, a car, it'll just naturally go wherever you want, or do you have to drive it there, right? The car could crash into the building, could go off the road, you have to keep it on the road. And when you go around a corner, it's work, so you have to keep it going. That's what being a grihastha means. Otherwise, why would God make a grihastha ashram? It was so maya. Why would Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda Thakur been grihasthas if it was such maya? Why would the Pandavas? Why would all the Prajapatis? Why would Brahma? Does that make sense? In our line, Narad Muni, you know, definitely is a brahmachari. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Others may or may not have been. I think Madhu also. He was also not married. You understand? So then, why would that happen if it's all my... Bhagavatam is full of stories of all just hardcore sannyasis and brahmacharis, right? Every last story. And Bhagavad Gita is only about brahmachari. Krishna was a brahmachari, Arjuna was a brahmachari. right? Everybody on that battlefield is a brahmachari. You know what I'm saying?
But the difficulty now is that he received this advice from senior devotees, and it's not very nice to doubt them. So how should we think that?
Well, at this point, we either stop the conversation or we go to another point. Because I'm not going to be blamed for going against the local authorities. So next question.
There's a concomitant relationship between the Grihastha Ashram and Garbhadhana Samskara.
Garbhadhana Samskara and Grihastha Ashram.
Yeah. So even I heard from the lecture from Bhaktichara Swami, Mayapur, he said, I remember clearly that Grihastha who doesn't have children with illicit sex. So to which extent is this true?
Say again? Means if they don't have
children,
by according to Garbhadhana, it's illicit sex.
If they don't have children at all, that's illicit sex.
The point that's being made is that a grihastha has children. Generally, one gets married to have children. Because illicit sex generally means sex that's not according to religious principles. That's the general definition of that sex not according to religious principles is illicit sex. So one has to take what's the point being made. Right? The point is that grihasthas, according to tradition, you know, and according to the rules, have children. That's generally how the scriptures would describe. You know, they wouldn't say it's like illicit. Means you could say it is as sinful as illicit sex. That you might be able to say, but to say it is probably just, you know, was how you say it? The presentation. What they were trying. You have to take what they were trying to say. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like that.
The main point is that
Grihastha
Ashram is meant for having children.
Grihastha Ashram is meant for having children. But in that point, everybody should stick to their own needs. It's not a crusade. In other words, a boy that's grown up in a, you know, natural household environment, you know, a prosperous, meaning emotionally balanced environment, and a girl's grown up in such an environment, if they get married, basically you can say they'll always have children. But you'll find that some that have grown up in the very strange, environments that they grow up in these days, they're not strong enough to live on their own. They need to be married, but they just can't relate to beyond that. It's not ideal, but if that's what it takes, then it's used. But it's not professed. It's not the standard, but at the same time as it's not a problem. So in other words, we're not saying everybody's got to have children, or we're saying, you know, whoever has children is in Maya. The natural thing is to have children. But some people are so screwed up before they came to Krishna consciousness and marriage that they just can't handle it. But they've grown up in the grihastha environment, and they're most comfortable in the grihastha environment. So they're kind of like vanaprasthas. Does that make sense? Anything else? Or?
What happens with our confidential relationships? I'm thinking about a servant, friend, or marriage relationship after we leave our bodies.
Say it again?
What happens to our relationships with servants, with our friends, with our marriage partners after we leave our bodies?
It goes back to the universal form. That's where it's from. Was that what you were looking for, or you want to know if they come with you or something? Your wife is going to run around after you through the universe. Means you go back to Godhead. When you go back to Godhead, so you want to have that same family there as family, then what do you care what happens to it? You understand? Means these are the positions of conditioning that you're in this lifetime. And that has generated particular needs of the individual in their conditioned state. Therefore, these individuals cooperate together to engage their conditioned nature in the Lord's service. So once you, so the goal is to become Krishna conscious. Once you've done that, what do you need it for? You know what I'm saying? You have a thorn. You take another thorn to take that thorn out. And then what do you do with them? Throw them. So in this life, they have meaning. But in that life, they don't have that meaning. If they're all Krishna conscious, then you'll all be together doing service for Krishna. But who's what? That's something else. You understand? You'll be friends, but you won't have those family relations. Okay? What time is it?
5:23.
5:23. That means yesterday was...
3 past 4.
Something like that. Okay. Last question, then we'll stop.
So you mentioned that men should behave like men, they should be men, and then the women will be women. And you read a verse in the Bhagavatam that said that women are even willing to kill their own child to achieve their purposes. So is this what...
Is to bring your wife to the point where she kills your child and runs off with another man.
The brahmacharis hear this and then they want to stay away from this, and the man experience this within the grihastha ashram, and then they become vanaprasthas and sannyasis. Because they experience the reality of feminine nature.
That's one way of looking at it, yes. But one would hope that one would run the ashram so nicely that they wouldn't end up killing you and the children. The point is it's like this. Let us say you have a person that works on construction on high-rise buildings. So do they need to know, to be successful at their job, the dangers of what happens if they fall off one of those girders or anything like that? Does a driver need to know the, how you say? The results of improperly using the car and crashing the car? Does a chemist need to know the effects, the devastating effects of the various chemicals he's using if they happen to touch his skin? Does that make sense? So that's why you know this fact. So you know if you don't run it right, where it could go. And if you run it correctly, then you might be lucky. You understand? But the point is if you run this, only if you run it properly do you really see this. Those that don't run it properly will see angry ladies and this and that. They can see that, but there's the point is that that's this lady. But another lady that behaves nicely would be different. Vanaprastha and sannyas means I understand the nature of ladies, not this one. I've learned it through this one, therefore I owe a lot and I'm grateful to this person. But I don't need women, not I don't need this woman. You understand? A Naistika Brahmacharya means he doesn't need women, not that he doesn't need a particular one. That's the point, is that unless you deal with the nature of women, how do you actually know what it is? If by hearing you realize, why would you get married? But if you're married, then only by dealing with it, then you'll understand. That's why it's also said, first class man remains brahmachari, second class gets married. Right? Because first class heard, second class has to see it. But they're both first class brahmacharis. Does that make sense? You have to know what you're dealing with. Good. So in other words, if they're not protected and they're not happy, you don't want to know how far it goes. That's one explanation of where it could go. You know, look what happened with Shiva and Parvati. She wanted to go to the yajna. Shiva said no. So she kept taking all these different forms, you know. And when she got to the one where she's stark naked, has cut off her own head, right, is holding that head, and that blood spurting out her neck, she's drinking. Then Shiva said, all right, go. So the point is if you're going to work with it, you have to know what you're dealing with. Right? That's what I said. If a person successful with horses knows that if I don't deal right, I can get kicked, I can get thrown off the horse. Therefore, they generally, it doesn't happen to them because they know what they're doing. And if it does happen to them, then they know what to do about it or are not disturbed because that's the way horses are. So if your wife kills your children, runs off with another man, then you should go, it happens, okay. And then you should consider, okay, should I get married again or should I seriously take, you know, consider vanaprasth? Not that, oh no, she did this, oh that's crazy, how is that possible? What do you mean how is possible? We told you that before you started. You know, so when it happens and you go, okay, maybe it's time for vanaprasth. And we're grateful because she's able to give us that realization. Maybe not in a very pleasant way. She did her duty. Now you have to do yours. Does that make sense? So on this pleasant note, is that okay? Or is that anybody want to say something to counterbalance that? No? Okay? Okay. Yeah, he just be lucky that he wasn't poisoned also, right?
Hiranyakashipu was a man and he wanted to kill his child.
Yes. So on that we'll end here. Now that everything's been put in perspective. Shiva Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki. Jayatai Gaura Prema Rakhi.
Isteni Kegyelme Bhakti Vidya Purna Maharaj ki.
Actually, newspapers are full of news. Men killing their children after they get divorced. And I've read that psychologically they explained it that because men whose wives divorce men and they have children, the men, some men tend to connect the children with the wife. I mean, they are kind
of...
Yeah,
but these things are very feminine. You know what I'm saying? Men wouldn't do that. Women would do that. So these are men that grew up... Yeah, that's what I'm saying, because there's just too much feminine element in them, so therefore they actually react like women. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but it's not too achievable, but because of frustration, that their relationship with their kids was through the wife, and since that relationship has come to an end, they just can't deal with the kids anymore.
Well, that's probably also she got the kids.
Yeah, she got the kids, and when she got the right to see them, he got the right to see them.
Yeah, the point is, but if he had gotten custody of the kids, it might have been different.
Yeah.
But that's the whole thing, because then it's not natural. Mm-hmm. But that's because of this. But if he had another woman that completely distracted him so much, he couldn't care less about the wife and kids. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Maybe later, once the relationship mellows down, then I want to see the kids. But what it's saying here is that the woman, in having developed a relationship with another man, to get that relationship, if she had to kill her husband and kids, she could do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it was that important to her. That's the meaning of it. So that means they're that intensely needful of relationships that they could go that far. That would be the other way of taking it. So in other words, better the husband makes the relationship go right.
Yeah.
Because if he's doing nice and this and that, then generally she wouldn't kill them.
How nice.
Unless she thought that it would, you know, it wouldn't work. You know, it's a complicated thing. The point is that is a possibility. That's where. Don't make your wife too upset. But it's not by anger. That is because there's a lover. That example is given in that. It's not that she's so angry, therefore she'll kill her husband.
To achieve something, to achieve another
experience. Yeah, because that's so much greater, better, and the present one would get in the way of that. If it wouldn't get in the way, then they would walk out and leave because they're attached. They just want to expand. So they want to have all that plus more. You know, but this is that, this will get in the way of that, and that's so much greater than this, therefore that might happen.